Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Now, today we're going to the cinema with film critic Karen Krzanovich. Up for discussion, we have the latest Marvel superhero blockbuster, Avengers: Age of Ultron, Taiwanese dark comedy Exit, and Reese Witherspoon's new drama, The Good Lie. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show once again, Karen. Let's begin with the big blockbuster on the list, Avengers: Age of Ultron. Now, this is the sequel to the 2012 action-packed hit The Avengers, which sees Joss Whedon back in the director's chair as the star-studded cast take on a new enemy, Ultron, who's hellbent on human extinction. Tell us more.
Wow, you got it really. It's okay. A lot of people are against comic book based movies, and it's understandable because we've been inundated with them. You know, Ant-Man's coming, all these other things. But the thing about the Avengers Assemble, as you mentioned, was the one that he did before, is it brings together these archetypes, and these are actually serious actors as well. So in a way, we're legitimizing the humanization of these characters. But what Joss Whedon does is he writes the script as well, and his script is so good that he brings out the humanity in these cartoon characters.
Now, he was, of course, the writer of Toy Story before he went on to direct Buffy the Vampire. Mm-hmm. But it seems one of the point of differences is that the script isn't just pure irony and pow, wham, bang, but they have some good lines, I hear, these characters.
They've got great lines. And despite the fact that this is the biggest, most star-studded cast I've ever seen in a Marvel or any superhero movie, every single character is well-rounded. They have good lines to say. They're memorable lines. And also, they interact like people, which is saying something, particularly when you've got so many personalities. I mean, it's a vast cast. It's enormous.
Now, I was looking at the budget, and in the region of $220 million, yeah. I hear. How do we see this on the screen?
Well, you see the production design by Charles Wood, who is an exquisite production designer, is immaculate. It is clear. It's simple. Everything, all that money's on the screen. Also, they've shot in Seoul. They shot in England. They shot I think it was Italy as well. They went all around, and it looks very different. Bangladesh was another location. So they moved around a lot to give us this international flavor, and it really, really works. So I can't say it's a lot of money, but the last one was in I think it was $1.5 billion, I think, Avengers Assemble, I think. And we're looking to do better than Fast and Furious 7. And I think this one has a very good shot. Even before it came out, the IMDb rating was 9.3. And nobody had seen it.
Now, action sequence. Everyone's always trying to up the ante. What about
yes.
the choreography on these action
yes.
sequences?
Well, I call it fighting flab. There's very little of that here where you're thinking, oh, okay, they're fighting and they're wrecking some buildings. And, you know, right now I probably should go to the loo or something, you know, because I'm not really interested in a prolonged fight. There actually is, and I don't think this is a spoiler, there's a fight between Iron Man and the Hulk, which is interesting. That's choreographed very, very well. But for the most part, the fighting is kept down to a dull roar. And what is happening is there are big set pieces. I don't want to give too much away. There is like an Iron Man army as well. But it's basically having so many action characters. I mean, it opens with a battle sequence. Having so many action characters involves a great deal of orchestration.
So for someone who isn't into comic book action movies, is it a bit kind of surreal or odd to suddenly have all these action figures come to life in one movie and play against each other? That seems bizarre.
Well, it's kind of fun in a way. You kind of get all of your action needs met in one movie, which is nice. You know, you just think, I don't have to see another one of these all year. It's actually kind of fun because, for example, Chris Evans plays Captain America, and Captain America is a World War II hero, and he has the sentiments of World War II, which is, let's face it, my country is slipping. and so that's interesting to me.
Well, I got to have a listen to this. Let's have a listen to the clip and then we'll carry on.
Ah, it is funny, Mr. Stark. It's what, comfortable? Like old times?
This was never my life.
You two can still walk away from this.
No, we will.
If you believe in peace, then let us keep it.
I think you're confusing peace with quiet.
Yeah, what's the vibranium for?
I'm glad you asked that, because I wanted to take this time to explain my evil plan.
Karen has a big smile on her face. What's happening there?
Okay, that's James Spader as Ultron. And that is not a spoiler because you know he's in there. And that's Elizabeth Olsen as the Scarlet Witch and her brother, Aaron Taylor Johnson, as Quicksilver. Now, they are baddies and they are on the side of Ultron. And Robert Downey Jr., who does some wonderful lines. For example, he said, "I've had a long day, like a Eugene O'Neill long day." Ultron is the great power that needs to be defeated. It gets quite complicated, but very, very complicated, actually. But it's the voice work you can hear. Now, there's a lot of characters there, and yet we can follow what's going on, which I think is part of the wonder of Joss Whedon's ability to write.
Someone was saying that this franchise, the Avenger franchise, the cartoon franchise, is kind of the zeitgeist of Hollywood these days. Do you think it is?
Well, in what way?
I was just hearing it described as that. This is, you know, the Hollywood zeitgeist is, I suppose, this sort of pop, wow, bang generation.
Oh, I suppose so. But, you know, it's there are always problems funding movies. When raising $220 million is not easy for anybody. So the more stars you have, the easier it is. The easier it is to sell it, the more international locations you have, the more markets you can go to. But don't forget that in the 60s, we also had these enormous, we used to call them Euro puddings, but we used to have Ship of Fools, for example, which was full of big Hollywood stars. So this is something that Hollywood does on a cyclical basis.
All right, well, take your seats. Avengers Age of Ultron is rolling out in cinemas around the globe. Now we're going to slow things down a bit with a film that's rather more modest than the CGI-fueled Avengers. This is The Good Lie, a new movie by Canadian director Philippe Faladou about a group of young Sudanese men trying to make a life for themselves in Kansas City. They meet a recruitment agency worker called Carrie, played by Reese Witherspoon, who sets out to help them start again. So what did you think of this movie? What's the premise?
I love this movie. Okay, I'm just telling you right now, that's my objective opinion. This movie is based in, it starts out in 1988, where there are a group of 10 children escape a war-torn village. Basically, the fact that they're in the South Sudan is important. And they walk, they don't all make it. They walk to Kenya. It's 1,000 miles. And they have to learn how to drink from the dirt. And there's one bit where there's one girl amongst them. And they chase a cheetah. They're so hungry, they chase a cheetah away from a kill. And they look at her and they go, "Well, you're going to cook it because you're the woman." And I'm thinking, wow, sexism. Even in the desert, and everybody's starving. And they're all like 8 and 10 years old. They're really young kids. So the first half an hour is them surviving. And it's enthralling because they all... They love each other, but in a believable way. They want to survive. In fact, they end up drinking the leader's urine because they with this oath, "I want to survive." And you can see on their faces that it's horrible. And then suddenly we see them jump forward, and it's 20 years later, and they are in this Kenyan camp, refugee camp, which still exists. And they've all four of them have won there's four now, have won a lottery to go to America.
Well, let's have a listen to a clip from the movie and then we'll carry on. This is Carrie, and she's with one of the Sudanese migrants at the recruitment agency.
Let me explain something to you. In America, we have this thing called bosses, and they have too much power for their teeny tiny brains. But you have to put up with it because you need money to live and to eat and to go to school. So I'm going to try and get you more job interviews. It's not going to be easy.
I have faith, Yardie.
Yardie?
This is a special name for you.
For me?
Yes. It had great cultural significance.
What does it mean?
It means great white cow.
Okay. Well, it's better than a lot of things I've been called.
Well, I hear there are a lot of America fish out of water gags, mm-hmm. but it's not all simplistic or condescending, is it?
No, it isn't. The director keeps racism out of this, which is an interesting move. There would be racism, and thousands of these refugees came over to America and other countries and doubtless encountered racism. But what's happening here is it's a real culture clash. We feel sorry for the Americans, actually, because their culture is isolation, as they don't want to be together. These refugees, their whole world is staying together and doing things and laughing and sorting out problems amongst themselves. They have a much more human lifestyle. Even though they're working these terrible jobs, they still have their dignity. And that's what this film is all about. It is a little bit of a fantasy. It's written by Margaret Nagel, who's a wonderful writer, generally writes TV. But it's moving, and it actually says something about human society and what humans need. It's also very funny.
Well, the director's interesting. He is French-Canadian,
yes.
I believe.
Yes,
and he studied politics and international relations mm-hmm. before working as a documentary cameraman. Mm-hmm. So that must have really influenced the whole position of the film.
I'm sure it does. He has got a very interesting background. He's also won several prizes for screenplays, which I think are very, very interesting, as well as his feature film work. And this has an unusual touch to it. There is a film, I believe it's a documentary, and from 2006, which is very similar to this, called God Grew Tired of Us, which again is about the Sudanese refugees. And it is about the fact that they go through unimaginable torment to get where they are. And particularly what's happening now around Lampedusa. I think this is a very pertinent film, even though this was set maybe about 15 years ago.
The Good Lie is out in cinemas across the UK and Germany this month, to be followed by more territories as the year unfolds. And finally, we'll end with some Taiwanese cinema. Exit tells the tale of a seamstress who has an absent husband, a rebellious daughter, a hospitalized mother-in-law to look after, and finds out that she's hit the menopause at the early age of 45. In trying to seek a new lease of life, she becomes intrigued by a 30-something male patient in the bed opposite her mother-in-law and takes up tango lessons with a former colleague. The film follows her as she tries to break free from her loneliness to find happiness. Who is the director, and what is the style of this film?
Right. Now, I'm not very familiar with his work, but he's a very known cinematographer. His name is Chen Hsiang. I'm probably saying that wrong. This is his first feature. He's done two shorts before this. And he's featuring a very well-known actress, Chen Shang-Chi, who is wonderful in this role. She doesn't say much. She's quite passive. She's an observer. But she, you can see, we live through her eyes. Her front door sticks. A lot of times she's trapped in her apartment. her wallpaper is dripping. And, you think it's very much like Barton Fink, with the wallpaper curling off. Her daughter is surly. And we kind of blame her for that, really. And she finds release in this mewling eye. This guy has a terrible eye injury. And he's screaming in this bed opposite. So she goes over and accidentally touches him. And he stops crying, and so she kind of goes over and sort of starts touching him. And it's slightly erotic because he's an attractive guy and needs her. And her life begins to change. There's also a very, very beautiful moment where she's working. She works as a factory worker, seamstress, and she's having problems with her sewing machine. And she gets fired. And next time we see her, she's in the back of a truck holding her sewing machine. She's been given the sewing machine as a gift.
And music and tango is integral to the film. Let's have a listen, and then we'll pick it up from there. So what role does tango play in helping her find an exit to her dull life?
Well, she gets to make a new dress to go dancing with some friends, and she never really thought about it. She saw some coworkers in a hallway dancing, and it makes her feel uplifted. And I think it's not unusual, particularly in cultures that are not associated with South America, that tango is this hidden passion. Is this power, this source of life. And she becomes very, very attracted to that and begins to realize her husband's away working in Shanghai. Sometimes we kind of doubt that maybe she doesn't even have a husband, and we never really see him. And all of the detritus of her life falls away, and tango brings her back to life.
This is a debut film for an emerging Taiwanese director. What's the look like? What's the cinematography like, and how important is it to the impact?
It's very important. There's not a lot of dialogue here. There is a wonderful central performance, but the setup, the production design, and the focus of the light, the racking shots, are very important to keep us in just connected with her emotion.
Well worth seeing. Exit hit the film festival circuit last year with a 2014 North American release before premiering in Hong Kong and now here in the UK. For the rest of the world, do keep your eyes out for launch dates near you. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Karen Krasanovich, thank you very much as always. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next Monday when we'll be talking photography with Sue Stewart. In the meantime, have a great weekend and thanks for listening.